Oh boy, happy to be with you here this morning. Wow, it's Labor Day. For all of you who may be laboring on Labor Day, I want to say that I am right there with you. I just am doing double duty today. So if you were up late listening here to WORD, you may have listened to me for the past few hours. I did another Coast to Coast AM weekend, so I was hosting Coast to Coast AM. Started the show by interviewing a Satanist, and that was quite fascinating. And then after that, we talked more about different realms, reaching different realms with a different guest. And it's always fascinating conversations, and I enjoy Coast to Coast AM because it's non-political talk. And then when I get to fill in for Tara, I also enjoy filling in here because it's appropriately political talk. So you get to talk about really a full spectrum of things, and you get to maneuver it in the best way possible. We've got a big show planned for today, and being that it is Labor Day, I will admit that I purposely try to add a lot of guests in today. Yeah, you can still text the show. If you want to reach the show, it's still the same text number. That's no problem. But if you want to know, like one person I see just texted in and said, I'm laboring. Good morning, Ryan. Good morning to you, too. I do have those text messages up. Our friend Rich Rubino, a political historian, is going to join us in the next segment on Labor Day. Some other comparisons from today to different historical events. Dirty political tricks and hiding health issues. I think there's this fascination of Donald Trump's health that are coming from a lot of people that would still probably to this day deny that Joe Biden had zero health problems. They would probably go back and look at his presidency and say he was a model of good health, which I do not agree with. I don't think many people would agree with. But I wanted to make sure that you have an opportunity to get a little political history with Rich Rubino. Later in the show, too, we're going to talk to an expert on depression and suicide. Her name is Sherry James. And what's interesting about her is that she looks specifically at the impact that artificial intelligence and these chatbots are having on teenagers. They are building relationships with fake computer avatars, and what is that doing to their minds? Also, later in the show, we're going to be talking to Paul Fulfertz. He's a healthy living expert, and kind of in the same realm with ChatGPT and these fake AI companies. What happens when you get bad medical information on one of these chatbots? There's a lot of bad information that gets put into those things and then is given to you as advice, as a matter of fact. And a lot of people are, you know, doing things that are bad for them because of these artificial intelligent blunders. So that's in the next couple of hours. And of course, I'm always happy to hear from you during that time. Says, thanks for filling in for those of us who are laboring. I hear you. You're laboring there too. No rest sometimes. It's just how it goes. A few things I wanted to get to. And did you see the story about Rudy Giuliani, his spokesperson confirming it that in New Hampshire, he was part of a car crash? It's a real fascinating take. There's two different ways to look at this. You have the former mayor of New York. He was someone that ran for president, but he was also a lawyer for Donald Trump. And I was looking at different articles for him, and there was one news agency that sometimes I'll get articles from, news stories, and they used his mugshot as the picture for Rudy Giuliani. Okay, so what happened? Let's look at the story, and you can see just how they're purposely trying to be disrespectful here. He's 81 years old. He was in a car, a rental, with a colleague, and they saw that there was a domestic abuse victim, that which they later found out was trying to flag someone down for help. So what they do was pull over, and they're trying to help this person call 911 because they were part of this domestic violence. And as they were talking to 911, another car crashed into their rental. Giuliani was taken to a nearby trauma center and was being treated for fractured vertebrae, multiple lacerations, contusions, as well as injuries to his left arm and lower leg, according to a statement by Giuliani's head of security. Sustained injuries, but is in good spirits, recovering. They say this was not a targeted attack, meaning they don't think it happened on purpose. State troopers are investigating the domestic violence report on the southbound Interstate 93 shortly before 10 p.m. This was Saturday. The occurrences happening in the northbound lanes, and it sounds like all things considered, Rudy Giuliani was the Good Samaritan. He was doing a good thing. Doesn't have to pull over and try to help someone, but they see someone in need and they decide to help that person. So he gets hurt. Luckily, it sounds like he's going to recover, but not a great position to be in. And a news article uses his mugshot as the photo for the article. Very disrespectful, and purposely so, that I don't think I'm going to ever go back to that website. I think I'm just going to drop them out of my rotation. I'm going to be done looking at them for news articles. Let me try to get a couple of other stories here. Not everything is all positive, but not everything's all negative in the news today, too. Did you see the story about Epstein Island? This is kind of crazy if you think about it. But someone wanted to open up luxury hotels on Epstein Island. The plan was to create a private island with a luxury tourist resort. And now it appears as if the development of that has been pushed back. Stephen Dekoff, a private equity billionaire, bought two islands from the late pedophile's estate 2 years ago for the purpose of building a state-of-the-art holiday destination by 2025. This is from The Telegraph. It says, however, the U.S. Virgin Islands government said it had not received any planning applications for development and is baffled by the lack of construction work since the announcement. So let me just say this real quick. If the idea is you want to create this fantasy island for rich people, luxury tourist destination, and you're going to build it on the island where minors were sexually assaulted and raped, that's your location? What are you going to fill out a postcard, greetings from Epstein Island? To me, I don't care how much you paid for that island, the bad vibes from that alone is enough to stay away from it. Whatever you paid, it was too much. You got to stay away from areas that should be condemned forever. The person that bought it has a net value, apparently $3 billion by Forbes, so he's got enough money to do whatever you want. Could you imagine? Like, so satellite images have been taken to the island. They are. By the way, we're going to talk more about the Epstein Island stuff because it looks like tomorrow there's going to be these coordinated press conferences that are happening from a couple of different senators as they try to look at the Epstein information that has not been released yet. I think some of the victims of Epstein are going to be part of these press conferences as well. And it sounds like Speaker Johnson is actually going to say that this is going to get a vote. The Epstein stuff will get a vote. That's going to be fascinating to me, too, to see how that one plays out. We have all the audio that we're going to be catching up from over the weekend as well. And keep in mind that it is Labor Day, so sometimes you just wait for the next big story to drop. You know that normally happens on a Friday before a holiday weekend because they know people aren't paying close attention enough. I'm just waiting for another big story to happen this weekend. We know Congress is going to be getting back here soon to work. So what's going to be their priorities? By all indications, it sounds like law and order will be the priorities. What about the budget? What about cutting more money, finding more opportunities to lower our obligations to try to, I don't know, not dig ourselves completely to the core of the earth in debt? Maybe we can try some of that. All right, Rich Rubino, political historian on Labor Day, and political tricks, some dirty, dirty, dirty political tricks. Looking forward to spending a couple of segments with Rich Rubino this hour. I'm Ryan Recker. If you want to find me online, at Ryan Recker on Twitter, Ryan Recker Radio on Facebook is a way you can follow him. Connect with me there as well. Fill in for Tara on WORD. Don't go anywhere. Always good to hear from you. And I'm looking at some of the text messages this morning on the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line. One person said, good morning, Ryan. I think I caught the tail end of Coast to Coast AM. Was the lady a psychic, Satanist, or both? Always nice to hear from you. No, it was two different people. So no. And the person said, OMG, how could you ever wash all that pedophile ick off yourself after going to Epstein Island? That's referring to the article that the billionaire that purchased one of the islands wanted to make it into a tourist destination. I don't know what type of tourist you are trying to attract to an island like that. Joining us now is a political historian, someone that knows, I would quite frankly say, everything there is to know about politicians. Rich Rubino, thanks for coming on this morning.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me on again, Ryan.
You know so many different politicians. I know we've done this before. I'm not going to ask you to do it again, but just to give listeners an idea of just how well informed Rich Rubino is. I asked him one time, can you name the presidents in order? And he did it off the top of his head without even thinking, which is quite impressive, because I think if you were to go to an average American and name as many presidents as you can name, they may get to 10 if you're lucky. I don't think they would be able to name many in order. You know, Rich, it is a Labor Day weekend. A lot of people are hopefully not laboring, but here we are on the radio this morning. I am, and you are doing more television appearances every time I see you. Any Labor Day stories come to mind? Anything when it comes to presidents or politicians over a Labor Day?
For Labor Day, I would just think in a general sense, it's usually a day when politicians tend to speak to Labor Day crowds. The labor movement in general is something that used to be almost universally Democratic. It has since really beginning with Richard Nixon in 1972 when he ran for re-election and got the endorsement of the Teamsters. It's become more and more bipartisan, if you will. It's become more competitive. And you have a scenario where certain unions will support the Democratic candidates, and then some of the more conservative unions will support Republicans. Unions are obviously not monolithic. I think if you look, for example, at some unions, for example, cops, prison guards, firefighters, they tend to be more conservative as, say, some of the service employee unions in general. So it's really kind of up for grabs right now, which it really wasn't back before Nixon really did everything he possibly could to try to bring Jimmy Hoffa and the Teamsters over to his side.
Oh, yeah. Jimmy Hoffa. Now, don't forget, I'm up in the Detroit area. So the mystery of Hoffa is always one that is brought up. So let's talk about a couple of other things. And this is no different than any other year when it comes to politics. I don't know if we're just seeing dirty political tricks increase over the years, but it's probably good to point out that political tricks have been happening probably since the start of politics.
Oh, absolutely. And it's really part of Richard Nixon got caught for Watergate, but part of the reason him and John F. Kennedy were basically, the Kennedy campaign, the Nixon campaign were very much dirty tricksters, to the point that back in 1946, when Kennedy was first running for a congressional seat in Massachusetts, one of his opponents was a popular city councilor running named Joe Russo. So what the Kennedy family did is they found a guy named Joe Russo who lived in the district, and there was a custodian named Joe Russo. And they asked him, and they gave him some money, and they said, can we put your name on the ballot? So that when people, so basically what happened is people for the primary ballot, Russo campaign people went. The people who supported Russo, about half of them saw there were two Joe Russos on the ballot. One was a custodian, the other was a city councilor, and they split the Joe Russo vote. And that very much benefited John F. Kennedy and got him elected his first congressional race. And
I think that's hilarious. Honestly, I don't even know if that's legal today. Could you get away with something like that?
That's a good question. I guess the money part probably no, but you certainly could do it as a dirty trick. You can certainly, if you're willing to get the signature for somebody on the ballot and they agree to it, then yes, I think you could potentially could do that. I think the candidacy with the problem with the Joe Russo campaign is it really got caught kind of off guard, if you will. And they didn't have enough time to try to send the message up because they did it right before the filing deadline. But I guess theoretically it's something that you could do. It's something you could get somebody else's name on the ballot. Ballot stuff has always been, getting somebody's name on the ballot has always been an issue. Barack Obama, for example, his first state Senate race, what happened was there was a woman named Alice Palmer who was running and who had been the incumbent state senator. She said, I'm going to run for Congress. And then she was starting to run for Congress, realized she wasn't going to win, and came back and decided she'd run for state Senate instead. And the Obama campaign challenged her signatures, and it turned out a lot of them were printed when they should have been in cursive. So consequently, a lot of them were thrown out, and Barack Obama was the only name on the ballot. So there's a lot of kind of ballot shenanigans, but obviously in both cases, these are completely legal.
Oh, there's all kinds of ballot problems here in Michigan. But I'm going to give you a hypothetical, and let's say you go and legally change your name. Your first name would be Vote For Me, and the last name you'd legally change it to is Win $1,000. Now, if that is your legal name, according to the government, and you put that on a ballot, I bet you a lot of people would put would put that down.
I bet they, oh my God, are you kidding me? This very similar one, that similar to what you were just saying, and it's kind of interesting. Richard Nixon back in 1950 was running against Helen Gahan and Douglas, and he would, his aides would call up people, and they'd say, they would send stuff by mail. They would say, at a certain time, answer your phone, or you're going to win prizes galore. So people would answer their phone, and they'd pick it up, and it would be somebody coming on the phone and say, did you know Helen Gahan Douglas is a communist, and hanging up. So,
well, these are political tricks. Some of them have humor to it. Now, at the I don't know how much humor is involved with it, but I'm laughing now.
I'll tell you what the best one I think was. This was a guy named Dick Tuck who was working for the Helen Gahan Douglas camp candidacy, but he was a college student at the University of Santa Barbara, and he pretended that he was a Republican, and he invited Richard Nixon, running for the Senate at the time, to come speak. And Nixon obliged and did it. And so Dick Tuck, he was really a Democrat, and he reserved a room for 2,000 people, the biggest campus, biggest room, biggest auditoriums on campus, and didn't invite anybody. So Nixon comes thinking that he's going to be speaking to 2,000 people. He comes, there's literally 23 people in the audience. Dick Tuck gets up there and gives a half-hour introduction of Richard Nixon, and at the end says, and Richard Nixon has agreed to give us to speak about international monetary policy today. So Nixon has to get up to 23 people talking about international monetary policy when he's expected to speak before 2,000 people for a rally.
Oh, no. You know what that reminds me of? You know the rapper 50 Cent? 50 Cent?
Oh, of course.
Of course. I know. It's right in your wheelhouse. It's probably the music you were listening to right before we went on the air. But
Richard
he did something
Nixon
similar.
Was a big fan.
He must be a big Richard Nixon fan because he did something similar. So he was, I don't know if he was beefing or wanted to prank another rapper by the name of Ja Rule, which was going onto the concert stage. So what 50 Cent decided to do was he bought all the concert tickets in the first rows, so it looked like he was out rapping in front of an empty crowd. So if I had to guess, maybe 50 Cent is a Richard Nixon fan.
I always thought of him as more of a Gerald Ford fan, but maybe he was more of a Nixon fan. I think Ja Rule, my guess is between Rutherford B. Hayes and Benjamin Harrison.
You know, I know a thing or two about showing up to an empty stage. Now, keep in mind, back in my rock radio days, they would make you show up to everything in the county. So you would show up and there'd be like 10 people there, and they would make it sound like it's like a giant crowd or something like that. And then by the time you got back to the radio, you had to make it sound like it was a well-attended giant meeting. But we're talking small, small meetings that you would always be sent out to on assignment. You know, after the break, maybe we take a second to talk about hiding health issues. There's some questions about that. And a lot of politicians over the years have had health issues. How do the public find out about it? Do they ever find out about it? Some great stories there with Rich Rubino. You can find him online, R-U-B-I-N-O. Just do a quick search. We're going to continue with political historian Rich Rubino after the break. And I know we got a couple of seconds here, Rich. I'm always, always so proud every time I see you doing a national TV appearance.
Awesome.
I point at the TV, I say, that's my buddy Rich Rubino. Look at this. My beautiful Rich Rubino, there he is working so hard, living the dream. You're on pretty much every network at this point. So we'll continue with Rich after the break.
Thank you so much.
Well, welcome back. Joining us here is a political historian, Rich Rubino. Happy Labor Day to you, Rich.
You as well, Ryan. You as well.
So there's been a couple of issues with presidents, former presidents, and health. Of course, Joe Biden, Bill Clinton recently seen leaving the airport with a defibrillator. And then the hand thing with President Donald Trump, where people were zooming in on his hand. But also, probably for a day, trending on Twitter was that they didn't think Donald Trump was still alive. They thought they were purposely hiding him away. But when it comes to medical scandals, things like that, that's not unique either to presidents. That's been going on for a long time, things hidden from the public.
No, absolutely not. Well, one of them was Chester Arthur, and Chester Arthur came in after James Garfield died. He was assassinated in 1881, and he served from 1881 to 1885. And during his second year in office, it turned out he was diagnosed with Bright's disease, which is basically a kidney disease. and they kept it from the press for the, they kept it from the press. They kept it from the public throughout his entire presidency. Arthur eventually died of it just a year and a half after he left office. And the other president who I think is very interesting, you heard him a lot about him when Donald Trump was elected, because he's the only other president to serve two non-consecutive terms. And that, of course, was Grover Cleveland. And in 1893, the country, there was a depression called the Panic of 1893. And Cleveland found out that he had cancer of the mouth. And his aides believed, and he believed, that this might cause more of a panic on the Wall Street and certainly in the economy. So consequently, he had to get it taken care of. So what he did is he went to Buzzards Bay, Massachusetts on a vacation, and he said he was going on a cruise on a yacht. And they actually are in Massachusetts, and they snuck three doctors onto the yacht. And then while they were out at sea, they got rid of that tumor. And then when they came back and his mouth was looked a little bit swollen, the press said, we just had a tooth abstraction. And we never really found out until about 50 years later that's what had happened, that basically they had lied and said that he was going out just for that he was going out on a pleasure cruise. But in reality, he had cancer of the mouth, and they had to get rid of that cancer.
Wow, that's so interesting that it could take 50 years or so to find out later. You know, the Grover Cleveland thing, you know how I remember he was the first president on two non-consecutive terms? It's because of The Simpsons. And Abe Simpson, the Grandpa Simpson, said that he was spanked by Grover Cleveland on two non-consecutive occasions. So that one stupid line from The Simpsons helps me remember that one thing.
That is awesome.
What was going on with, you know, there's always these rumors that the president is incapable of fulfilling the duties, so their wife will take over. You hear about those stories, too.
Yes, and a lot of that goes back to Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson, who was president, he came in 1913, served until 1921, and when he was president, he actually became very much incapacitated by having a stroke, but they never really revealed. They just told the press that he had nervous exhaustion. And Edith Wilson, for all intents and purposes, took over what could come to the president. Basically became president of the United States, at least for all intents and purposes, it is believed. They hid a lot of his sickness from Thomas Riley Marshall, who was the vice president at the time, because they did not trust him with the presidential power. And it's a story that at one point, Senator Albert Foss, Republican senator from Montana, Woodrow Wilson was a Democrat, came to the White House to visit him. And he was very much a critic of Woodrow Wilson. They were suspecting that maybe he had a stroke, but this actually was a very good day health-wise for Woodrow Wilson. And he went up to Woodrow Wilson and he said, "I just want you to know I've been praying for you, Mr. President." To which Woodrow Wilson responded, "Which way, Senator?"
No. Do you ever find that there's false impressions of history, meaning something that people commonly believe to be true when it comes to politics is actually not true? What are some of those that come to mind?
That's a great question. Illinois Senator Everett Dirksen, he was the minority leader from the United States Senate. And there's one quote that even today he's attributed of saying, and that's a billion here, a billion there, and pretty soon you're talking about real money. Now, he was on an airplane at one time, and somebody sat next to him and said, "Senator Dirksen, I just want to let you know that I really agree with your quote, and that was a great quote," to which Dirksen said, "Oh, no, son. I never said that. It was just such a, but somebody attributed to me, it was such a darn good quote, I never bothered to deny it."
Well, that's one way to handle it, you know, don't let truth get in the way, or whatever that phrase is.
There's one more, too, actually. Lyndon Johnson, the story is, supposedly he was standing and watching, he was watching the news, and you always have three TVs, ABC, CBS, and NBC, and he'd be sitting there and he'd be watching it. And the story is, one time he was watching Walter Cronkite, and Walter Cronkite basically said, "Vietnam's a stalemate, needs a political solution," to which Lyndon Johnson supposedly said, "When I've lost Walt, I've lost the nation." But there's actually reports that at that time he couldn't have been watching TV, because he was speaking at John Conley, the governor of Texas. He was speaking at his 51st birthday right when that speech was going on. But many historians have said that he was watching the television sets, which could not have happened at that time. So that's another one.
Oh, interesting. Do you think that in retrospect, we'll look back at the Biden presidency and the Trump presidency, and we'll know more about what was going on behind the scenes? Or do you think we're getting better at keeping secrets and we won't get to know as much of what the truth is, at least?
I think we're actually, I think that because the president, because we have so many sources of media, and because people, because there's always going to be sources of media that are going to try to go after the those politicians, and it's going to be on the internet, it's going to be a lot more prevalent, that it's going to be a lot harder to keep secrets. I think that just Joe Biden specifically, the book that came out, Original Sin by Jake Tapper, really went over some, this is less than a year after he left the presidency, really went over some of the ways that the administration tried to cover up certain things. I think that very similar to Donald Trump with his hand disease. I think that there's been a lot of coverage of it. Certainly before you had went back in the days when you back in the days of Chester Arthur or Grover Cleveland, it would be very easy to cover this up, in part because you really never saw the president except for, you know, a picture that maybe got in the newspaper of the president. You never saw video images. You didn't really you never heard their voice. So just a lot, bunch of different political time, if you will.
Random question. Who was the last president to do a train tour?
The last president to do a train tour of the country?
Sure.
A train tour of the country. Well, I know that Truman did a train tour. He went on the Ferdinand Magellan and went all around the country on a train tour when he was running for his full term as president. I know Bill Clinton did in 96. When he was running for re-election, he took a train tour around the country. So
okay.
I guess I would say Bill Clinton.
I saw the Truman train in St. Louis. They have it out on display. That was kind of cool. But, you know, with the Missouri roots, they have the Transportation Museum there, National Transportation Museum. And it's just like any other train. You're like, okay, this doesn't really seem presidential in today's. When you think of what's put together for a president, everything's so luxurious. So I'm like, no, this was just what would look like as a regular passenger train. You know, Rich, by the way, if people wanted to find you online, your books, some of the different appearances, where can they go?
Yep. You can just go to Rich and then Rubino, RUBINO.com, or find me on Facebook, Rich Rubino.
Great. How have you been feeling lately?
I'm feeling great. Thanks so much for asking. I had a cancer scare recently, but I'm in full remission now, and I'll be doing the 5K walk for Dana-Farber next month, so I'm doing great now.
Fantastic. You said world-class people there, right? Just amazing.
Oh, absolutely. One of the five best in the country. It's in the Boston area. They really treated me. I had B-cell lymphoma. I had cancer for about a year, but it's basically completely left my system. So I'm doing absolutely great right now, and I'm very, very, very grateful and very much back to regular life now.
I'm so happy to hear that. And you know, you see the photos and the hair, and it hasn't slowed you down because, man, you were still doing all those different appearances. So, Rich, it's always a pleasure, and I'm glad you can squeeze us in between national TV appearances.
Yep. Well, it all started with you, so.
Rich Rubino, I got to tell you, it's because you're so good. It's so fun to talk to you. You have such a great knowledge to it. Have a great Labor Day.
Thank you so much, Ryan. You as well.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara on WORD. And welcome back. So thanks for all the text messages that are coming in. Really appreciating that. And by the way, it would be really easy for you to message us too on the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line at 800-905-0989. So I saw this one quick story on the New York Post. Josh Duhamel. I'm hesitant to say his name incorrectly, but I'll tell you this. If you were to see a picture of him, you would recognize him almost immediately. He's an actor. He's been in some big movies. He's been in some big television shows. Josh Duhamel is someone that is preparing for a doomsday bunker situation. And he's an actor that left Hollywood. He lives in Minnesota, and he has recently given an interview. He's a star of a new Netflix show called Ransom Canyon, and he admitted that he still needs to sharpen his survival skills so that he can prove steady different sources of food in a world-ending event situation. And he said, I could be a better hunter, I could be a better fisherman, I could stockpile a little more food supply, but he's thinking that way. And he purposely took his family outside of Hollywood so he doesn't have to be part of that cesspool. Maybe that's the way to put it. There's a lot of weird, crazy things that go on in places like Los Angeles that, you know, for some people is perfectly fine. But if you have this sort of, you know, fear that one day society could be down a giant spiral, then I'll tell you where you don't want to be is major metropolitan areas. And he recognizes that. He's got a nice plot of land. I'm looking at some photos. And there he is preparing. And he said, I got out of that. I'm still taking acting gigs. He said he's not doing as many auditions as he should. But he's still doing acting gigs, and he's living his best life. I so admire that. I always want to flirt with the idea of living out in the middle of nowhere. And it always goes back to the same thought that it would make educating our children so much more difficult. My wife said she is up for the challenge of homeschooling, and it's very tempting. I always fear that if we're living in the middle of nowhere, that one, I wouldn't be able to get regular work. That would be tough. But two, the other side of it is the socialization with our kids. It's always seems a little bit more difficult to make sure they're getting that side, that fulfillment needed. I don't need it as much. Now my wife needs it a lot more. Maybe that's just more a man-woman thing. You know, there's another story that came out that was kind of interesting. This is at Burning Man. So complete opposite of what this actor is doing. He's trying to get his own plot of land, be a good steward of that land, prepare for the worst and be ready for it, learn the skills necessary in that time. These are all things I admire. Anyone that goes to Burning Man, these are people I don't know if I admire people that go to Burning Man. One, I'm a convenience guy. Living in the forest with a bunch of sweaty, smelly people that are using the ground as a bathroom for days on end does not sound appealing to me whatsoever. Two, the shenanigans that go on at a place, a big festival like that. Now, I'm sure the drug use is just given, but I'm guessing there's other pretty bad, sinful things that happen on a regular, like you can't look to the left or right without seeing something that would make a nun blush. Let's put it that way. So Saturday night, apparently there was a Burning Man festival that was going on in the Nevada desert, and they had to call police, which is something that I'm sure the people at Burning Man want nothing to do with the police that are there. But an adult male was found lying on the ground, basically in a pool of his own blood. So now they are trying to solve a murder that happened at Burning Man. Just honestly, it's surprising it has taken this long for something like this to happen. All things considered, with the lawlessness that happens in these deserts, I'm kind of surprised this is the first time we've heard of it. All right, coming up after the break is an expert on depression and suicide. Sherry James joins us. And what is social media and AI doing to our kids' brains? It is not good. Not good. It's taken them to some pretty dark places. So we'll talk to her about that coming up. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara on WORD. Don't go anywhere.